It is July 3rd, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. They have a Blade server for us, dedicated, pretty awesome, and they've always been wonderful on support. Thanks, GNI. It's time now for Geekspeak. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP. And that's all I've got. That's right, I'm alone today, folks. No geeks in the house. Everyone was here last week. No one's here this week. And to top it off, it's a recorded show. Wow, what a mix, huh? No live calls, no geeks. So what am I going to do for 43 minutes? Oh, wait, 53 minutes. Darn, I had 43 minutes of contents. Not 53. Well, here's 10 minutes of silence. Well, that's not going to work. I'm going to launch Skype and see who's online. Ooh, Dee Dee Hubbard.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey.
Okay, so I decided to call Dee Dee Hubbard on Skype, and Dee Dee is, I wouldn't say one of the original geeks, but she was on the show
between 2000 and 2003.
Can you run GeekSpeak for, I want to say a year, but it might have been less, unfortunately.
Might have been a little less.
Yeah, before you went off to grad school in New York, and then you never came back again. And I wanted to catch up with you, because you're always on top of everything. Like, you're definitely a young, hip geek. Right now, you're a volunteer in roller derby, but you hurt your toe, and therefore are not roller skating as one of the skaters, but yeah. You're keeping the organization going. What's your role there?
I am nerd herd chair for the Women's Flat Track Derby Association. I wrangle the nerds, and I try to break down the geek speak for the other skaters and refs and officials, other volunteers like that.
So you're still kind of doing your geek speak role, but in Ohio.
I geek out wherever I go.
So are you kind of like the IT director then for the organization?
Right.
Okay, cool. I like Nerd Herder. You're also very lively in lots of things online, and use Twitter a bunch. And I'm just wondering, do you use Twitter on your phone? What kind of phone do you have?
I had original iPhone. It was a gift or / bonus, whichever way you want to look at it. I love my job. Thank you. I joined Twitter. I've been using Tweety almost since I started using Twitter on the iPhone. I now have a 3GS, so it's a little nicer, better, whatever, faster. But I like Tweety because it's simple, and I can check it constantly. So I guess it's my distraction of choice, really.
So do you say you're on there more than Facebook?
Oh, definitely.
All right. So you, and what are you recommending for people? Like, one thing I do is I've got a lot of different areas of my life. I've got the public radio space, and I've got GeekSpeak, and then my professional work, which is digital art support, and then like family and such. And all those groups with 200 and so contacts in those groups, my Twitter feed is so full that I never seem to really get through it. And I'd love to ignore some of it. Got suggestions?
From my more social guru-y type friends who follow not just 100 feeds or followers or whatnot, but maybe even up in the thousands. The weapon of choice seems to be TweetDeck, which allows you to group people out a lot easier. I'm not sure how well it uses the new Twitter feature lists, but that's probably another way for more average users to sort of parcel out their people that they want to follow.
It's funny. It's like you want to follow a lot of people, especially if you respect them, and like unfollowing them seems like a, you know, rude. But at the same time, you can't really handle the kind of load that you might want to be associated
right.
with.
Right. Despite Twitter being my favorite distraction, I also don't want it to take over all of my attention. I do have to get work done during the day. So.
Yeah, I've heard about that idea. So, do you have an iPad?
I don't have an iPad. I dream about it, though.
Why not get one? I mean, you're probably a well-paid developer, right?
It would fit in my discretionary funds. But if I were to have more discretionary funds fall in my lap, I probably would finally pull the trigger.
So next bonus.
Possibly.
I've been kind of wanting to wait till the next generation because it feels to me like there could be so much more to that device.
It has a lot of potential. With the updates on the screen of the iPhone 4, one has to. It's hard not to make the leap and think, well, maybe the next iPad will have a nice boost in Retina display technology or some sort of.
That's the high resolution screen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Where you can't see the pixels anymore at about a foot away from your face.
Right, right. I had a friend that was like, well, if I do an iPad if it had a camera in it. I'm like, you got to play with the iPad before you really want a camera. Like, you don't necessarily need a camera. But, of course, with FaceTime, of course you'd want a camera in it. That'd be a perfect device to use for almost conferencing.
Well, yeah, it would be very nice for that. And something that Steve Jobs said in his keynote at the Worldwide Developers Conference said that he hopes that by the end of the year there will be millions of these FaceTime-capable devices out there. He didn't specifically say iPhone 4s. He said devices.
Right.
So,
and didn't he kind of allude to it being kind of an open platform they're helping other people do things
right,
with?
Right, they decided to, like WebKit, which is what's underneath Safari and Chrome, to open source it so that other people can pick up where they've left off on the basics of FaceTime and maybe Google could hop in and borrow it for their GTalk application, which I do use to communicate with my girlfriend. We're long distance. So it would be nice if, hint, hint, it was a little bit more stable and easy to connect to.
So GTalk is not that stable?
It uses Flash as its base technology. So
I see.
Is that enough said?
That's enough said. Yeah, I've got Safari crashing all the time because of Flash. So is Apple evil?
I think that they're highly motivated in the way that very ambitious, potentially evil people are.
Okay. What about Google?
I think Google wants all of my information, and they want me to be okay with that.
And are you okay with that?
I feel a little icky about it, but I'm not completely. It's kind of like I'm holding my nose. I'll put it that way. I'm holding my nose as I'm shaking their hand. I understand that I can get something out of what they're giving me for a while, but that I don't want to give them certain information. It's probably safer.
That makes sense. Okay. Cool. Was there anything else you wanted to cover?
No, just that I really do miss GeekSpeak and geeking out with you all on the weekly, and so it's nice to be included.
Do you have a good group of people that you're geeking out with?
Well, the little place I work at, Workday Consulting, we do kinds of lots of little web applications, sometimes enterprise stuff, on-site consulting, that kind of thing. We are a small group, but we are tight-knit, and, you know, it's if I want movie references, I just talk to my boss, Bill. If I want, like, some sort of a funny gag, I'll go over and talk to John. And Andy's really good for commiserating over Apple rumors that don't come true.
Wanting more out of the next device. Is Andy still Andy that you went to school with?
No, it's new Andy.
Oh, okay. And you guys mostly do Rails development or Python development?
Well, that's sort of my niche area here. But we also do .NET things, .NET applications, working on iPhone stuff on the sly, and just sort of, you know, whatever you want to throw at us.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. I'll put a link up on the website.
Oh, that's nice.
Cool. Thank you so much, Didi.
Well, thank you. All right. Bye.
Bye. Okay, there's 10 minutes down. It's enjoyable so far. What to do for the rest of it? Well, Didi mentioned Twitter, and I do have a pretty good following on Twitter, and then some on Facebook as well. Yeah, let me get on Twitter and ask. Let's see. Okay, Twitter. All right. Trying to pull together a one-hour Geek Speak show. Pre-recorded. No geeks. No calls. How will I fill the time? Suggestions and content. Welcome. Too many letters. Suggestions/content. Welcome. Okay. All right. Let's call Chris Dumphy. He's a geek, too. And Chris is on Skype. Sweet. How you doing?
Doing great. Yourself?
I'm doing okay. Hey, I got a bit of a problem.
Okay.
This week's Geek Speak is going to be recorded, so no live calls, and no one's in town. I'm totally alone, which means that I got to record something before the show and slice it together. And I just contacted Dee Dee and did about 8 minutes with her, and I was wondering if you wanted to do about 8 minutes of catch-up and geeky rebroadcasting quality stuff.
I think that could be fun. I could grab Sheree, too, if you'd like.
Is it easy for you guys to both be on Skype at the same time with good sound and quality?
Well, right now I'm just talking on the speakerphone. I don't even have a headset grabbed at the moment.
It sounds a little raw, but it's not bad. Yeah.
So I have headset and can grab. And
Well, if you did headset and grabbed, it would be hard to get Sheree on, too, right?
No, it's actually because we each put in an earbud and then the microphone dangles between us.
Woohoo! Let's do it.
Okay, what are we doing?
Geeks.
Right now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So good. I'm batting 300. They agreed to do the interview. Awesome. Let me introduce these two cats. Their blog is technomadia.com. Their site, this is Chris Dunphy, good long-term friend of mine, used to be on Geek Speak a lot. Then he sold his house, sold everything he had, gotten an RV and started traveling. And through his travels and spending a lot of time online, found somebody else that travels a lot. That's Sheree Vaillard. And their blog says, living at the intersection of epic and awesome, traveling, living, working, and playing full-time in a small solar-powered RV, embracing nomadic serendipity. So we had some microphone confusion, a little bit of setup time, and...
Yeah, got the microphone in between us. We each got an earbud. You could take one of these little iPhone headsets and turn it into magic.
Is that what you're using? Is the iPhone?
Well, using an iPhone headset plugged into the Mac MacBook Pro, but because the MacBook Pro's headphone port now works as a headset jack too.
You learn something new every day. I didn't know that. That's
the
great.
Since the last, I think 2 years, the Mac laptops, the headphone out jack has also got the microphone hookup. So if you've got a headset, you just plug it right in.
I should be trying that right now. But I won't because I'm actually working on this end. Can you guys hear me?
We're
done. All right, good. We're going to go ahead and keep going then. So, hi. All right, so Adventures Nomadic Serendipity is your website and blog. But of course, you use Twitter and Facebook and Flickr and a live journal as well to log your adventures across the world. Where are you right now?
Virtually or physically?
Physically.
Physically, we're in Florida. And shall we explain why we're in Florida?
Sheree. Do you want to talk about your father real quick?
Sure. So a couple weeks ago, we got the news that my father was diagnosed with lung cancer. And because we have a life designed to be able to be where we need to be, we made the decision to reroute our summer plans and come to Florida. And we've been here for about the last 3 weeks helping the family through the surgery. And he ended up having a lung removed, but he is recovering fantastically. And it's just been really awesome to be able to be here and have it not really disrupt work or anything else in our lives, really.
We're able to literally pick up and move our house and not have to be staying in a guest room where we would be uncomfortable and we'd be in imposition. We're here, we're just neighbors who are able to be full-time on call and help, but we have our house. And
right. That's nice.
Our house is going to be in California later this year, and... our house moves, and that's what we love.
I'm assuming your house is pulling towards California because of Burning Man?
Yeah, Burning Man will be the next major destination. We're going to visit a friend in Indiana later this month, right?
Right.
And then start heading west for Burning Man and then hang out in California for a while, and then who knows what next.
Right. Okay, so the thing that always gets me is, how do you pick up your entire life, make it portable, and then make a living?
Robbing banks helps.
Stores are easier, but less lucrative. But the hardest thing is just deciding to do it. Kick yourself out the door. I give yourself an eviction date and say you're going to be on the road by this day. You'll kind of find the work, figure things out as you go. We've had random types of clients. Our latest project is actually an iPhone app called State Lines that. We were inspired by all the traveling around, all the different laws that change every time you cross a state line.
Everything from can you talk on a cell phone to can you buy beer in the grocery stores?
Yeah. Oh, wow. And yeah.
So we're like, okay, well, this is really confusing. We the rules change. You think you know the rules, and then you cross into a new state, and some little basic stuff is different. Having an app that gives you really quick reference of like where you're currently at and what's there. So we wrote our first iPhone app. It's out now, selling in the App Store, called State Lines, and you know, that's one of our latest make a living projects.
So it's funny for myself. I already had a mobile friendly career doing software development, mm-hmm. and as long as I had internet access and my computer, I was able to work from anywhere, anyway. So when I had the opportunity to join Chris on the road, it was really not that big of a leap for me in my profession to be able to hit the road and actually be fully working mobile. But we have run into people that are doing, who are being mobile and nomadic and doing everything from twisting balloon animals as they move about, to giving dance lessons, mm-hmm. Setting up coaching and consulting businesses.
Selling jewelry.
So it's not just limited to us geeky people.
Yeah.
Do you, the iPhone app, did you guys develop it yourself? Did you hire somebody to do it?
No, we did it all ourselves.
Cool.
We did everything from the development, the graphics, the research.
We're working on the iPad version of it, so that'll take advantage of the full screen. And we just got our iPhone 4, so now we're like, oh, okay, we need to redo the graphics to be even sharper and higher res. And
the iPhone 4's resolution is higher, and therefore an app that's written for the original iPhones, and when you port it, it doesn't look as crisp and beautiful unless you make sure all the images are higher resolution.
The text looks crisp and beautiful. It looks absolutely stunning on iPhone 4, but now the pictures of the states, we don't have a lot of graphics in our app, but the pictures of the states now look a little bit fuzzy. Because everything looks fuzzy now. Even our laptop screen looks fuzzy now that we've seen an iPhone 4 screen. The screen resolution is just stunning.
And it kind of changes your perspective on phone resolution, doesn't it?
It does. I want every screen to have a 300 DPI interface, because they, you know, that's basically the resolution of paper. So it's like screens no longer like screens. They just look great.
Yeah.
And the sooner we get screens that have that sort of sharpness, the better. The iPhone 4 is really the first thing to do that.
Do you guys have an iPad?
Yes,
we have two of them.
Two, uh-huh. Really? And did you get the one with self coverage?
One with cell coverage, one without.
I'm kind of putting back and forth on whether I'm going to buy one. I was just talking with Dee Dee, and she's kind of wants to wait, like as I do, for the next gen, hoping that it has a 300 DPI screen as well.
That would be stunning. The trickiest thing for doing an iPad with a 300 DPI screen is the graphics horsepower to move around that amount of pixels.
Mm-hmm.
Is getting pretty phenomenal, but I'm really hoping they do it, because that'll just look incredibly cool.
Now, Chris, you have a long history of being a portable expert, a mobile expert, a mobile device expert. What do you think about Apple's lockdown on software on their device? Is Apple evil?
I was actually working on what would have been Palm's App Store years and years ago ahead of Apple, and I was planning to do something very similar of you have to have a little bit of a lockdown. And I think Apple has been is being shown to have done the right type of lockdown. Most everything is allowed, but nothing that breaks the rules isn't, and they manually screen everything that goes through to ensure quality. I don't know if you followed the news of the Android. Google activated their remote ability to kill Android apps for the first time, because a security researcher wrote an Android app claiming to be a preview of the movie Twilight and put it out there, and several hundred people downloaded it, and it didn't do anything other than download test code from his server to check and see whether a malicious app could then suck up people's address books and make phone calls. And it didn't actually do any of this. It was just a proof of concept, but he put it in the wild and several hundred people downloaded this through the Android App Store. That sort of thing can't happen in the Apple universe. And so I think most people like having somebody trying to be the gatekeeper for what gets into their phones and into their stores. I do wish Apple had a way, other than the unofficial jailbreaking way, that for the advanced geeks to say, okay, no, I'll handle this myself.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. Where basically it's nice if you can be a safe environment and anyone can do it without messing up. But some of us want to be able to do something a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wouldn't mind writing my own little app that I don't publish anywhere else, that just takes my location every once in a while and posts it to my web server in a private way. You know, just so that later I can have a trail of where I was. You know, nothing big.
Yeah, and actually one way you can do that is you can sign up for the Apple Developer Program, mm-hmm. and then write apps for your own device and for 100 of your friends as well. So
then you have to make a signature for each one, right?
Yeah, you do. So that the app can't spread, but you can put whatever you want on your own phone if you are a developer, and you can do it for your friends too. I mean, you could sign them up under your developer account. So I've actually written, apps that wouldn't get approved in the App Store, that do certain things, but it's kind of experimental basis, and have given them to friends and saying, here, go use this and get online and do things.
Well, throw some of that stuff my way. I'd love to test stuff for you. That'd be fun and
Oh,
play.
okay, yeah, definitely hook you up.
I've been doing a little bit of iPhone development as well. I haven't released anything yet, so it's cool to know that I've got friends that are doing it. Who's the coder in the portable house?
Well, we both have a I have a coding background, but
Yeah.
I'm kind of like saying no more coding.
Yeah,
So
I'm doing all the Objective-C. Cherie's done the most of the research
and graphics.
and the graphic design.
So
So it's
Cherie,
working.
why are you saying no to coding?
I've just done it for so long. It wasn't really my passion to be able to code. It's just something I can do, and I just merely got fed up with constantly having to relearn different environments just to keep up, to keep doing the same thing that I was doing, which is my interest is more in the infrastructure and having a vision for a system and putting it together.
Okay, that's cool. I like the larger concept. When you start hacking down on code, I get into a zone where I don't interact with the rest of the world and forget to eat and things. So I can see that that might not be desirable or enjoyable for people over the long haul. For me, it feels like a peaceful, tranquil place.
Yeah.
But
I hadn't done any programming since, almost all the way back to when I was in college. I'd been mostly doing higher level stuff. So it was really kind of refreshing to dive back in and learn Objective-C. And it's like, wow, this is really fun to get my hands dirty and play with the bits and stuff. 'Cause, and to not have to like then poke somebody else telling them to do something this certain way and whatnot. It's, very, very freeing to be in charge of your own code.
Yeah. Now, you
Now,
guys, do you, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Let's see. What I wanted to ask you. Oh yeah, how what do you guys think about Google's desire to kind of consume all knowledge?
it's you've seen Terminator and Skynet, right?
Yeah. Is
Well,
that what it feels like to you?
I think Google, I think it's actually kind of cool. I think it's what Google is doing is really, really awesome, but it also is a little creepy, but mostly awesome, but a little creepy.
Let me explain the Skynet Terminator thing. The movie Terminator with Schwarzenegger. Skynet is the entity that becomes sentient and kind of destroys mankind. And of course, it has to, it's the idea of that is called an epoch of technology, and it's a common kind of mythos in the geek community that at some point computers will get smart enough that they'll surpass humans. And as soon as they get kind of self-awareness, they might grow at such a rate that will it'll look like God quickly. And that idea, Terminator kind of shows that as an evil side of that, that
Yes.
the technology might decide, humans are just in the way and just obliterate us. A lot of people that have more optimistic side think that it's going to happen and it's going to be beneficial to us, that they'll be wonderful overlords or helpful in some sense.
And so far, Google has been incredibly helpful. I mean, I can't imagine life without Google, and I can't imagine how, what the internet looked like before we all were, it had instant access to so much information. When you actually used to have to dig for things, and now you just Google it and it appears. But if imagine if Google ever intentionally lied to you.
Ooh, that's kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Just only serving back some kind of responses. Kind of like how they were doing to China for a while.
Or telling us that there's cheese on the moon.
Which they do. The Google Earth app that allows you to navigate the world in 3 dimensions has a Google Moon version. And when you target the moon, if you zoom in too close, it just becomes cheese. Because, of course, we don't have the detail resolution for that close. Right, I forgot about that. That's a great joke. They do a lot of inside jokes. They feel like a good place to be, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
and mostly I trust that Google is aspiring not to be evil,
Okay.
and mostly I trust that Apple is aspiring to deliver the best possible design and aesthetics. The neither one of these companies are companies that I consider as explicitly malicious, and actually I think neither one of them is being driven by, well, let's make as much money as we can. Who cares about the end users and customers? They each have their own very different vision of what sort of things they can do to the world. But, you know, each of them have their downsides and potential creepy implications and such, and or draconian overlord bits. And but you know, hopefully there's competition and other people will emerge and do
I would take it that you guys are both pretty optimistic, though, wouldn't you say?
Chris, and Chris is that's kind of his middle name, I think. I think I'm more a little more realistic, but
I have the optimistic disease as well. You guys also are very public in who you are, meaning that you blog a lot about your life. You're always telling people where you are. And some people have a much more conservative perspective on what the world should know about themselves, them, right? And this idea that, I mean, I think that probably Google's kind of open, transparent, lots of content everywhere. We'll suck up everything and share everything. It kind of fits with your feeling about how you share your life with people, right?
Right. I mean, it's like we use Google Latitude, which is Google's way of allowing you to put your GPS location online. And we use that and actually display where our current location is. I don't like put where I'm physically at the moment, but I at least will display what city I'm at, because I've typically found that the more information I put out there, I get back more good than I do negative. Like, we get to meet amazing people because they know that we're in town. Like, we were just contacted yesterday by some people, some who've been reading our blog, says, "Oh, we're nearby. Can we come out and join you for lunch tomorrow?" So we get to meet and interact with and have so many more amazing opportunities simply because we do put ourselves out there.
It's
But that's our
interesting.
choice.
It's interesting because your lifestyle, of course, doesn't create natural neighbors, right? I mean, I know my neighbors around me, and I try to do make sure to get in contact with them and be social in that sense. But then again, I'm in a rural environment, and sometimes we lose power and the road goes out, so we need to know each other. But I think there's an understanding in our current society that people don't seem to know their neighbors very often. So you guys are kind of totally taking it in an opposite direction and saying, let's get to know people. It doesn't matter where they are, we'll go to them. It's neat, a side effect of having the technology show people where you are. But you're also kind of public figures. I mean, I wouldn't say you're famous, but you're definitely well known. I mean, in the techno nomadic lifestyle, you guys are the highlighted group. You know, I mean, everyone knows you in that sense.
It's been kind of humbling to have been linked to from Make Magazine and Gizmodo and Lonely Planet and various other travel sites and stuff this past year. Our blog gets a lot of good traffic, and we meet a lot of great people by blogging about our technology and travel adventures.
What's the best
What's the best?
diner in Indiana?
I would ask Google that.
I thought you might. Do you guys update on Yelp? Restaurant reviews and things?
I do occasionally. If a service somewhere or food really just blows us away, I do keep an update there.
Or if it really blows.
Or if it's really sucky, then yeah, we'll put a review up there. But we don't use it quite as often. We probably should be contributing more because we definitely utilize reviews when we land in a new city to find where the good places are to go.
Can you just tell me what Yelp is?
Yelp is kind of a collaborative, mostly restaurant, but it was now branching out to all sorts of service rating and review sites. So, you know, people can look up on Yelp to find the best Indian food nearby and see all the reviews submitted by other people.
Yeah, so it's reviews not by critics, by actual customers, and a lot of them are locals. So it's a great way as a traveler when you come into a city to find out where the locals eat.
Do you think I mean, some of the mystery of having a local place is not letting people from outside know where it is. Isn't that kind of the idea of a local joint?
Well, I guess the Yelp review in that case could say, you know, horrible food, go away, very unwelcoming to outsiders. I mean, you know, you could put that in the Yelp review and see what happens.
And you guys both have iPhones, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Did you both get iPhone 4 or just have one?
We
We
both jumped
you
in.
both jumped in. It's
Yes.
hard not
Yes.
to when you're developers.
Yes, we actually had a call from one of our other technomatic friends, and he was at an Apple store in Minneapolis, sorry, at the AT&T store in Minneapolis the other day, and he sent us a text message. He says, "I'm here. They have stock. Go to yours now."
We'd been frustrated with the pre-order mess, and our pre-order didn't go through, and we'd tried calling around, and no place had iPhone 4s, and so and you know, just the other day, it's like, "Oh my God, it's our chance!" So we got up early and ran out. And, got ours with no waiting at AT&T. So,
I have one on order, unfortunately. 2 more weeks or something like that. Ridiculous.
It's pretty darn sweet.
All right, is there anything else you guys wanted to cover for today's weird, strange episode of Geek Speak?
The weird, strange. It's really good to hear your voice. It'll be great to get out to do Geek Speak in person. This August, September, something like that. And anybody wants to follow us, come to technomadia.com, and we'd love to connect with people wherever you are in the country.
And of course, we'll have that link up on geekspeak.org. And yeah, take notes and stuff in down south when you're at Burning Man, and share what's interesting in Burning Man when you come up through Santa Cruz. Yeah. And Sheree, good luck on your father. Hope everything goes well with that. And
thank you.
Enjoy your drive across country.
Great spontaneous call. Glad to hear you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Well, I got to say, I appreciate the style of life they have, totally, but I'm more of a homebody. In fact, I'm home right now, and it's time to get a snack, and I got to also look at my Twitter feed and see if anyone's responded with anything. Of course, my Twitter feed also mirrors over to Facebook, so I'll look at both those places, get a snack, and you listen to a crazy USB of the week. Yeah, that's it. We'll play a crazy USB of the week, but which one? So for a while, Al's been doing the show, and he records a new crazy USB of the week. And we got Disco Ball, Ninja, that was a good one, Endoscopes, Lava Lamps, Steampunk. Oh, this is awesome. Oh, you like this one.
Al here, bringing you GeekSpeak's crazy USB device of the week. It was dark that evening. I was still in my office, not expecting much out of a day that was only filled with dead ends and lost souls. And then she walked in. Her lips were red and her eyes were dark. She looked at me and asked for my help. Something about her PC not being able to see her Mac on her network, I don't remember. It was her eyes. She had control over my every thought. I had to remember this moment. Good thing I had my USB Zippo lighter spy cam. Well, it wasn't really a Zippo, but the point is it looked like one. And it could easily take video through a pinhole lens at 16 frames per second. I slowly tilted the USB Zippo lighter spy cam so as to capture her in glorious 640x480 resolution. She looked at me with those big brown eyes and said, "Why are you sticking that lighter in my face? Are you trying to burn me like I've been burned so many times before?" I told her, no, it's not that, it's really a USB Zippo lighter spy cam, and I'm filming you. That slap stung like a belly flop off a 40-foot high dive. As I watched her go, I thought to myself, that was one crazy USB device I should have kept in my pocket.
You know, I gotta say, I love Al's crazy USBs of the week. I'm tempted to play another one, but let's go over and check out Twitter. Nothing on Twitter, by the way. Facebook, got some posts. Thanks, Facebook people, for responding. Okay, Sarah Eisenberg writes to me, "What is the best preventative measure a Macintosh user can take?" And Sarah is a web consultant, sarahisenberg.com, web consultant and project manager in Santa Cruz. Okay. And this circled around the Nextspace mailing list. I am assuming that Sarah's office is at Nextspace, which is this kind of cool Santa Cruz community co-working place, right? So if you're a contractor, independent contractor, something like that, and you want to have kind of a social office scene, that's what this thing's for. Okay, so this question about what preventative measures a Mac user can take circled their email list. I wish I was on that email list because then I'd know the answer to what you need to do. But on a Mac, you're kind of safe. I mean, I know that seems ridiculous and maybe I'm too much of a convert, but it's pretty convenient. You don't really have to worry about viruses, though you do have to worry about malware. And malware means that software that you install that isn't actually very good for you. And the only time you really see that in the wild is when you get stolen software. So if you go to a torrent site and you download the Adobe suite, the person that spent the time to make it hackable and put it up on the site also might have put in a little Trojan horse, which is an application that will run and do things on your machine. But you do have to install, you have to go and find copyrighted material and not pay for it and then download it to your machine and install it. And then it might infect your machine and be able to do keylogging, which is capturing all the keystrokes on your computer. Just avoid that. But the biggest thing to do, and this is for everybody, this is the most important thing you could do for a preventative measure on any computer system, that is have a second copy of all your data, all of it. Hard drives fail. Every single computer has a hard drive that stores most of the data, and that hard drive 95% of the time is a moving parts hard drive. It's a spinning disk, magnetic disk, spinning really fast with little tiny heads that float across the disk on a cushion of air, and they move back and forth and read all the data on the drive. And anytime there's a little tiny bit of dust or anything inside there, it'll damage it. Sometimes eventually the head just kind of crashes and hits the plate and rips the material off, and it's a mess. Any case, one day, if you haven't had it already, if you haven't dealt with backup correctly, one day there'll be a click in your machine, there'll be a fuzziness, and something will happen, and you'll go, oh no, I can't get my drive. And you'll go to your geeky friend, or you'll call GeekSpeak, or you'll go down to a computer shop, and they'll say, yeah. We'll say, yeah, the drive's probably dead. I hope you have a backup. And you'll go, no, I don't have a backup. Can you get the data off? Well, we can try. And this recovery place will charge you $1,200 to try. But sometimes they open it up and they see little pieces of metal flaking. And that means your data has been moved into the realm of chaos and it's gone. Bye-bye. So the way to deal with that, on a Mac, it's nice and easy. There's a solution called Time Machine. It's built into the OS, the last three versions. You hooked up an external USB drive, which you can go pick up for $50, right? And it says, you want to use this for Time Machine? You say yes. It copies everything in your drive. Every day or every few minutes, it will copy new stuff that's changed. Not making duplicates, but just making kind of, this is the newest thing since now. And the cool thing about Time Machine is that if you ever want to recover your data, you run this application called, Time Machine, imagine that. And it shows your machine what it looked like since you've been running your drive every day. So you could back up for, weeks past and find what file you already erased, right? So very cool backup solution, great little package. These packages exist for Windows as well. The most important thing is if you've got content on your computer, if you've got photos or something you wrote, and that's the only place that you have it, then you are being very risky. Much more risky than having it in your house and hoping a fire doesn't happen, right? We all know we should probably prepare for fire, but it's kind of rare. Hard drive crashing is not rare. It happens all the time. It's like a fender bender in a car. If you've been in a fender bender in a car, you're going to have, it's the same type of thing. One day, everything's going fine. Next day, you've got a dent in your car. One day, everything's going fine. Next time, you've got a dent in your hard drive. But a dent in your hard drive means catastrophic failure. No data recovery. Gone. Or spend $1,500 and then find out your data's gone. Just go get an external hard drive. Do it now. Make it like something you think about until you go pick it up. Okay. Enough of that. That's what I'd recommend, Sarah. And if the mailing list came about and suggested some other things from Nextbase and said, actually, you really want to do this. Oh, there's one little thing I can think of. Keep your machine on overnight every once in a while. The OS, Macintosh OS, actually has a cleanup feature and some daemons that run that. Daemons are good things, by the way. It means a process that runs by itself. To clean up things, to clean things up. So make sure that happens every once in a while. Is there another thing from Sarah? I think there was. Let's go back to that. Sarah also suggested, I want to warn people. Sarah, thanks for this warning. Be careful upgrading to the Mac OS or iOS 4. Excuse me, not Mac. The iPhone, the iPad, the iTouch. These devices run the iOS, and the most recent version is version 4, and it came out, a couple weeks ago. And sometimes when people upgrade their 3G phone, it goes really slow, and Sarah's having a nightmare every time. So be careful. Read up on it first. I'll put the Lifehacker article that she links to up on the GeekSpeak website before you upgrade your 3G phone. There's another link too. Leah Cox, a friend of mine, suggests talking about Google Chrome, Dropbox, and Google Sites. Okay, Google Chrome is a browser made by Google, and it's free, and some of the engine in it is open source, and they are trying to seed the market with their own browser. The Mac version's not great. The Windows version is. Linux version, I'm assuming, is good as well. And a web browser, the ones we can talk about and know about are Opera, Microsoft Internet Explorer, Safari, Firefox, and about 700 others, but those are the big ones. And Chrome has just entered the playing field, and it's quite good as well. It has very similar rendering, or it makes web pages look very similar to Safari because it uses some similar technology. It's got a really fast JavaScript engine. When you're dealing with a web browser, when you're looking at web pages, you actually have a whole bunch of stuff going on that's rendering what the web page is supposed to look like. HTML is the basic language that kind of has all the content in it. CSS, or cascading style sheets, is the thing that makes it look good, or colored and fonts and all these different things. And then JavaScript is the part that makes it dynamic programming kind of environment. So if you click on a box, click on something on a web page, and it opens up kind of a something inside the page, like a pop-up, but doesn't really leave the page, that's JavaScript. If you are filling out a web form and you submit and it says, whoa, wait a second, before it actually goes anywhere, wait a second, you forgot to give us your phone number. We need your phone number so we can spam you with phone calls. That little pop-up, that's JavaScript. But JavaScript and HTML and CSS have been increasing in ability. And now, if you look at the kind of newer web apps, like Google Docs, for example, is a great example of this, Yahoo Mail, Gmail, you have some really quite amazing abilities to make the browser environment like an application, like a really dynamic application. And that's all thanks to the standards that go into the web standards, the W3C. And it also has to do with companies making really good browsers, right? So Chrome and Safari and Firefox have kind of been pushing the envelope of compatibility and speed, and we're getting to the point where we can have really amazing apps like, as I mentioned, Google Docs. And by the way, let me just put a push for Google Docs. Google might be, you know, might be evil or scary, as Dee Dee might kind of suggested, and I'm kind of concerned about it as too. But Google Docs allows you to look at a Word doc, a PDF, an Excel document, right? These standard things that we deal with all the time through your web browser. But more importantly, you can share it with anybody you want. So you get a Gmail account, you go to docs.google.com with your Gmail account, or your Google account, and now you can take any Excel document you have on your laptop, on your machine, right? Or any Word document, upload it to Google Docs, and now it becomes viewable in your browser. And then there's a sharing link, and you say, I want to share this with people. I want to share this and make it editable with people. So you push that button, and you pull in your email address of friends that you want to be able to view this thing, and you send it off to them. They can all open the document. You're all looking at the same document. If you update it and they look at it later, they see the updates. If you set it so that they can edit it, they can add things to it. Great way to collaboratively work, and at any point, anybody can download that. Anybody that you give permission to can download that document back to your file system to print, or you can print from the browser too, but back to be an Excel document. So if you want some feedback from some people, it's a very cool tool. All right, moving down. Who else made a comment to me? Oh, well, I didn't finish with Leah's thing. Dropbox. Dropbox is a free application and service that puts your content online. I think they give you 2 gigabytes of space, which is not huge, but pretty cool. It runs on multiple platforms. You run it. It shows up in your dock area at the top of your screen in a Mac, and the bottom of your screen in a Windows machine. And it makes a folder on your computer called Dropbox. And anything you put in the Dropbox folder on your computer gets copied up to your Dropbox online. And that becomes kind of a private thing. But it means that if you have multiple computers, a home computer, a work computer, maybe a personal computer, you can set up the same account and sync your Dropbox amongst all those. So you drop a document on your computer in Dropbox, and it then copies it to the server. And then when you go to your other computer and you look in your Dropbox folder, it's already downloaded for you already, and it's there. And it actually does syncing. So if you change one of those documents and save it, all of them get updated. The other cool thing is you can actually share documents through Dropbox. So you throw it into a kind of a public space in Dropbox. And then when it's in there, you can kind of get a click on it, right click on it, and see what the public URL is. And you can email to somebody. Now, you're not emailing the file. You're emailing them where the file is, which means that you're not clogging up email service. And if you email it to 15 people, you don't have to spend time uploading to all the 15 people, right? You're sending a link to them, and then they download it or go view it. It works for photographs. It's a really cool feature called Dropbox. You can find this out on geekspeak.org. The last thing she asked about was Google Sites. Google allows you to make free websites and host things. If you want to do everything in Google, you can, because they really do provide everything. I don't really use that feature much. I tried that for GeekSpeak years ago. It wasn't what I needed, so I didn't do it. But I think there is a Google GeekSpeak page. It might be google.geekspeak.com. No, google.geekspeak.org. But I could be wrong. I'm not sure. All right. I think that's... Oh, Bill House asked if I watch Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men. And who do I think is funny, Sheldon or Charlie? You're going to have to help me out here. I know Charlie is Charlie Sheen. That's cool. I like him as an actor. And I know Sheldon because I have seen a couple bits of The Big Bang Theory. But I don't watch either of those shows. I don't actually have television in my home. I do radio. Surprise, surprise. And I do watch Hulu sometimes. And I do Netflix sometimes to watch TV. But I haven't watched The Big Bang Theory in its entirety. Though I know Sheldon's funny because I've seen some clips on YouTube of The Big Bang Theory. What do you think? Which one do you like? Send me a note. All right, those were some good questions. I'm liking it. Thank you, Facebook. Well, there's one more I wanted to address. Paul Jacob Roberts says, overview of the tech that goes into making the show, Etherpad, etc. The tech that goes into GeekSpeak. Well, first off, we're broadcasting through KOSP's main signal, 80.9 FM on Mount Toro. Let's skip that part. Normally, the geeks sit around a table. I run the board with a whole bunch of sliders that basically allow the geeks to, you know, be heard, and we all have laptops, so we're all kind of have our news already collected. The show itself, we're actually chatting with a thing called Etherpad. We actually use iEtherpad. That's iEtherpad.com, or maybe it's .org. Any case, I'll look that up right now. It's a allows you to do real time chatting and working together. So as I type a document, all the other geeks get to see what I'm typing. So when we go to our iEtherpad, you see the entire script of the show, kind of a skeleton of what we're going to cover, right? The kind of beginnings of the show and the end of the show and different bits in it and such. And then each of the geek actually also participates. So you get a really good you get a good feel for what's going to happen. I move around their stories that they write up, and this is how we flow the show. You can use this tool. It's a very cool tool to use if you've got a group of people, especially when they're not together. But anytime you want to work on a collaborative document, it works great for real, real-time stuff. Google Docs does the same type of thing, so you can do it with Google Docs as well, and it's almost the same real-time. In fact, they're actually the same company now. Google Docs bought them. It is iEtherpad.com. Go play with it. You can make a free Etherpad. You can send a link to somebody. It's fun. We've covered great stories about it. We actually had Etherpad on right before they were bought by Google. When Google bought them, they actually open sourced their technology so you can run this service on your own web servers. And that's what the group that is running iEtherpad did, because Google stopped supporting Etherpad. And so people liked it, so they wanted to start supporting it. So they created this thing, and you can go use it. It's really cool. Okay, that's a fun one. Other tech we use. We could talk about the GeekSpeak web server. The GeekSpeak web server is a mishmash of technology. We have a Drupal blogging system in there. Drupal is a open source PHP content management system. Basically allows you to make web pages and edit them through the web browser very conveniently. And Drupal is, I'm pretty familiar with it because we use it a lot at UCSC where I work. You can see kind of its extensive use if you go to Drupal.org. We only use it for a small port for the blogging and the contact form on the GeekSpeak page. We also, on the GeekSpeak page, the GeekSpeak website, have a very complicated publishing system built upon Cocoon. And Cocoon is an Apache project. Apache is kind of like this giant open source project group. I think it's a corporation or nonprofit organization. In any case, the most popular web server in the world is Apache's web server. And Cocoon is this Java servlet. It runs inside a servlet engine. In our case, we use Tomcat. And Cocoon's running inside that. And what Cocoon is a giant publishing system that uses XML and XSLT, which is a translation engine for XML. XML is a type of document that defines itself in a human readable way, which computers can use. So, for example, if I were to give you a recipe for pancakes, and I said, I need you to have a cup of milk, I need you to have two eggs, I need you to have two cups of flour, I need to have, you know, a tablespoon of sugar, and so on. If I were to list that out to you in a kind of recipe way, You'd be able to read it pretty easily if I just said what I just said, right? Just kind of a list. In any case, that recipe is pretty easy for us to understand. A computer might not understand it. If you told a computer to do it and serialize that data, it wouldn't necessarily be human readable. So XML is kind of the mix between the two, right? You can open up this document, and what it would say is, you know, starting a recipe, everything in between this thing and the thing I end this with, it's called recipe, that's the recipe. Now, ingredient one, the amount would be, you know, tablespoon. The ingredient itself is vanilla, probably more like a teaspoon, but depends. And the document itself kind of defines what you're talking about in ways that we would understand it. That's XML. HTML documents are actually XML documents if they're well-formed, they're structured right. In any case, Cocoon takes an XML document and then it translates it using a style sheet or a XSLT into something else, and you can translate it into an HTML document, which is like our web pages, or can create another XML document like an RSS document or a podcast, our RSS podcast. Okay, so that's Cocoon. And then to edit the content, I actually wrote a Ruby on Rails application that only the geeks see. It's kind of a private space, and it allows us to add new content to the website. Miles wrote all the Cocoon stuff. I wrote all the editing stuff in Rails. And then let's see what else. The podcast itself is kind of interesting because NPR looks at our web server every day, and when it sees a new post in a hidden URL, it grabs our MP3 file and all the content from the XML document about our show, and it posts it to its server, and it adds a little commercial in the beginning. And then the revenue it makes from those commercials throughout the year, it passes off to KOSP as a bit more revenue for KOSP. So that's how the podcast works. That's pretty much the tech. We can talk about today's show. I'm editing on my MacBook Pro, and I'm using an application. It's called Sound Studio. It's a pretty good multi-track editing software package. Pretty simple. I'm using a microphone. I'm using a Shure SM57. And I'm going into a little USB breakout box. And this allows me to take the Shure SM57 and plug it into my computer via USB. And the box that I'm using is an M-Audio. An M-Audio Fast Track Guitar Mic Recording Interface. Very cool little box. Yeah, that's all the tech that we're using today for GeekSpeak and what we normally use. Good question. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Today with David Lawrence and is used with permission. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll be back next week with some geeks in the house, maybe some calls even. We'll see.